This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Classical music is just like any other music, and so many people are actually interested in it, and it should be mainstream, but it isn't, because we put ourselves kind of into a little classical music ghetto, and we feel safe there. But at the same time, is it really the best thing for the music itself, and is it the best thing for the organizations who present it?
This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Hing in a quiet corner of Day One Philharmonic Patronus, the heart of classical music in a city, in the heart of the city. With me today is this weekend's AMPO's guest conductor, Christian Javi, who is described by Reuters as, quote, one of the canniest and most innovative programmers on the classical scene. Beyond conducting in concerts, he has recorded 60 albums, including the soundtrack to the 2012 film Cloud Atlas, which starred Tom Hanks. He has also founded an orchestra that this year won the European Cultural Award for its commitment to promoting dialogue between European states and regions. Welcome.
Hello, very nice to be here.
You conduct so many different orchestras, you have got albums. How would you describe your sound?
Well, you know, it's a very strange thing that conductors have their own particular sound. I mean, you might not think about it, or actually realize that that might be the case. But every single conductor who steps up in front of an orchestra, from everything that he does, not only directing traffic like, you know, a lot of conductors do, they, through their presence, physicality, charisma, and also what they say to the orchestra and their movements, in combination of all of that, they emanate a certain presence which affects the orchestra collectively to create a certain type of sound without actually saying verbally too much. And I would say that for me, I'm very much somebody who is looking, or at least trying to exude a certain confidence in the player so they can actually independently give as much of themselves as possible. Of course, collectively as an ensemble, they have to play together and be an orchestra, but it's the individuals really in an orchestra which makes every orchestra unique. And for me, that is the thing which I'm trying to play and actually bring out as much as possible.
Sounds a bit nebulous, but how would you describe this sound though?
Well, I hope if you listen to me long enough that you'll be able to actually say, yeah, this is a Christian Järvi sound, you know. If you look at, let's say, your signature is your signature, right? If I tried to, you know, write your signature, I probably wouldn't really be that successful. Just like a violinist or a trumpet player who plays, let's say, another instrument, they wouldn't really be as good at that as playing their own instrument. Plus, you have those other variances where, let's say, even if they take another instrument, they would sound like them. It's not the instrument that creates the sound. It's actually that person who creates the sound. You know, only Lenny Kravitz can make his own sound, right? Nobody else can. So it's not that nebulous, to tell you the truth. Actually, for me, quite clear that the only thing that truly artists brings is himself. Not actually the repertoire and all of that stuff is the vehicle that he uses in order to convey himself. So in classical music, we're constantly talking about the orchestra and the repertoire and, you know, Stravinsky and maybe, you know, let's say Beethoven or something like that. But those are all vehicles. And the chemistry that is created between an orchestra and a conductor actually comes from the same type of interaction that, let's say, you would get as meeting somebody who you've just befriended at a party or something like that, you know, and sometimes you hit it off and sometimes you don't.
So in the conversation to hit it off, what do you tell the orchestra?
Initially, when I meet them, I say, good morning. But generally speaking, look, I concentrate on very particular things which are actually very basic and very simple. Popular music has been a very big part of my life. You know, I created a group called Absolute Ensemble in New York about 20 years ago, which was kind of an idyllic student dream of how one would imagine the perfect world of music, where there are no musical borders, there are no genres, there's a band which can play everything from Renaissance to rock, you know, or rap, let's say.
Very versatile.
Exactly. And also having people who can improvise but read music as well, work together as a collective and create and arrange and improvise and do it, but also are great friends and can hang out and, you know, and not have any of these kind of feeble, petty agendas, you know, which usually us humans, we all have petty, feeble agendas, you know, all over the place. So, and that doesn't necessarily mean in the field of music. I'm talking about in any field. So if you look at the bigger picture and really as an idealist approach music as something that can be a reflection of a microcosm of actually the community that you imagine, then the musicians are not your colleagues, and that they're not your professional peers, but they're actually your inspirational friends, you know, who you create with. You truly, honestly make music without this kind of preconceived notion of how things should be and shouldn't be. Music happens on the spot. For example, if you have certain principles in place, like a certain phrase grows from here to there, and you know there's an internal rhythmic pulse which drives that phrase, and everybody is feeling that. Jazz musicians call it groove. Classical musicians, they don't want to talk about groove because that's kind of a too unsophisticated word for classical musicians. You know?
Too loose.
Yeah, exactly. But for me, that is exactly the type of stuff that I try to infuse into a classical symphony orchestra, because I feel that classical music is just like any other music. And so many people are actually interested in it, and it should be mainstream, but it isn't, because we put ourselves kind of into a little classical music ghetto. And we feel safe there. But at the same time, is it really the best thing for the music itself, and is it the best thing for the organizations who present that music?
So what is it you coax out of them during your rehearsal so that during the performance time you get what you want?
Well, look, all of these musicians, they, I hope, started and have continued on the path of music and are playing in an orchestra because not only that they have worked very hard and achieved certain results which have given them certain status, but it's because they actually really love what they do, I hope. And because music is such a intangible and very spiritual art form, we shouldn't make it artificial, but actually real. And we should coax out of the musician that genuine love and inspiration that they've always had to create. And that's what I'm basically telling them is that, wait a second, this isn't long or short, or this is right or wrong, but let's actually, yes, let's take care of all the manual kind of logistical stuff, but let's not forget the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is to make sure that the audience is not only hearing an incredible virtuosic orchestra play something fantastic, but to make it also look easy. You know, make it look easy and absolutely, wow, like we're breathing it out of us, because you know what? This is what we do. We know how to do it and we love how to do it. And there's nobody else who can do it better than us.
During a rehearsal, do you play the whole piece or do you just work through those parts that might have some issues or problems or whatever the word is that you would use?
First thing I do is actually play through the whole piece, because you then get a understanding for actually where we stand. Orchestra has an idea of what you want from them, and also you have a better idea of the orchestra. And then, of course, you clean up spots and, you know, you take it from there. But generally speaking, you don't just play through. I mean, there are, you know, if something doesn't work, you got to fix it. And so with a piece like this Firebird, Stravinsky, I mean, there's many versions of this piece. There's a 1910 original ballet, which is very long. It's about an hour long. And then you have a very small suite, which is about 15 minutes long. And then we're kind of doing the mid-sized deluxe. And that's the 1945 suite, which is actually really, even Stravinsky called the best that he could possibly imagine. And so that's going to be on the first half of the concert.
Conductor Christian Javi, he'll be conducting the Malaysian Philharmonic Orchestra tomorrow, this Saturday at 8:30 p.m. and Sunday at 3 p.m. Coming up, we'll drill a little into how he has reinterpreted Stravinsky's Firebird Suite. This is Front Runner Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Tune to Front Row, the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Hing. Not in the studio, but in the quiet corner of the Dewan Philharmonic Petronas, visiting with guest conductor Christian Javi, who will hold the baton this weekend when the MPO plays.
The Firebird is going to be on the first half of the concert, and on the second half of the concert, we're doing this musical landscapes, which is a concept which Ole Edvard Antonsen has put together with the help of his band members about this Nordic landscapes, actually. A reflected and musical interpretation. And since we're both from the north of Europe, it's very much, and believe it or not, Stravinsky Firebird is also, you know, it's St. Petersburg. It is all music that actually emanates from in and around the Baltic Sea region.
But aren't you an American?
You know what? I may speak American, but, you know, you can take you can take the boy out of Eastern Europe, but you can't take Eastern Europe out of the boy.
I'm really surprised because when I was reading through your biography, you were described as a conductor from Estonia.
Born in America, which I'm not. I came there as an immigrant. In fact, as a refugee, you know, in 1980. The reason why we left Estonia is the reason why all people leave their countries for, you know, one thing or another made life impossible to actually live in that country. And we luckily got out in a situation where we actually could reestablish ourselves in the United States. And even though I, my formative years, teenage years, were spent in New York, and also my college, etc., was done in America. I'm very much at home now in Europe, and I have an orchestra in Germany. I have created another orchestra, the Baltic Sea Philharmonic, which is basically a collective of young musicians from the 10 countries of the Baltic Sea region. And I spend most of my time in Europe now. So even though my family, actually, they live in Florida, it's a nice place to go. And I love America, and I love what America has given to me, because I wouldn't be so open-minded and probably culturally diverse in my mind if I didn't go through this phase of Americanism.
Will your music carry an American flavor or European flavor? Do they play into your music?
Well, you know, as this is called the Christian Järvi Sound Project, you know. You can only get Christian Järvi from him. You know? And all of those journeys which I have taken, and I'm still on, actually, are forming me constantly, every single day as a person. So that's, you know, what you see is what you will get.
You have a series called, under your name, called The Sound Project, and it was launched in 2014. And it was described that you have all these different ensembles, and they're characterized by your unmistakable approach in taking a fresh look at the old with concepts and presentation that transcend the borders of classical music. What does that all mean?
The core of what that paragraph actually says is that a conductor is more than, you know, somebody who is a glorified secretary in front of an orchestra, you know. Yes, he's a musician, and the traditional role of conductor is actually an organizer and a certain kind of musical leader. But he's also somebody now these days who, particularly if you look at me, somebody who is very interested in bringing the various musical genres together and having homogeny and togetherness in the musical field. That's representing very much tomorrow's concert in the fact that we're doing Stravinsky Firebird, which is a Nordic composer in my neck of the woods, actually, from St. Petersburg. I'm from Tallinn, you know. These two cities are separated by 300 kilometers, right? Then Ole Edvard Antonsen on the other side of the Baltic Sea from Norway. You know, we're covering the whole Nordic landscapes from this Firebird, which is actually not some kind of a story of Central Asia, you know. It is actually a story of Russia, Russian folklore and Russian folk culture and of resurrection, very much actually similar to Swan Lake, Tchaikovsky, which is about the swans and how there's a battle between light and darkness, and finally of this incredible resurrection of and the win of the good over evil. Yeah. Same thing, in principle, is Firebird. It's all of the different darknesses that have been overcome by this incredible fire and light and beauty. And so just like Ole Edvard Antonsen's musical landscapes, it's a journey through all of these different landscapes of the north. And then finally you have this auroras, you know, with the northern lights and all of this purity and all of this cosmos and the infinity and endlessness of space and time. And when you start to actually think conceptually through directing and putting together a concept, something which people can philosophically and ideologically attach themselves to and say, wait a second, this was much more than just a bunch of nice pieces performed well, but this is a whole world that we're actually being brought into. That's an experience. That's something that I don't want to leave. I want to actually do it again. Where can I see that again? And that's a Christian Every Sound experience.
You were described also as somebody who's trying to popularize classical music. Is trying to bring in the different genres a way of popularizing classical music, which in your own expression you said has been put in a ghetto by the musicians themselves?
You know, popularizing classical music is a very fine line, because if you actually even talk about classical music as a separate genre, which in my opinion it isn't, then you are already talking about having it be separate from something that exists in nature as a whole. You know, music exists.
Music is music,
you know. And so if for various commercial reasons, whether it's, you know, CD sales or, you know, just alphabetization of some kind of goods for services type of situation, you need to put things into categories. But I don't really feel like, look, music developed from the time of tribal music, where people were singing and dancing and doing all sorts of rituals, up to the point where those rituals took on some kind of organized religious value. And those religious things then started to transfer into some kind of organized notation. And then came people like Bach, you know. And then came people like Haydn and Beethoven, who said, well, we can do so much with this. And then came people like Wagner. And then he said, no, no, everything that you guys are doing, that's very old-fashioned. And then people like Stravinsky, who said, that's even, Wagner's old-fashioned, you know. And then came other people. And then finally came people like, you know, Elvis Presley and Chuck Berry, you know. And then, you know, they said, that's old-fashioned, you know. And then it goes on and on until Led Zeppelin and finally rap and God knows what else, you know, and techno and hip hop. So this is a constant evolution of music. This is not like we look at somebody just invented rap. You know, rap comes, you know, I could show you how rap is related to things that Vivaldi did, which are much more rocking than one would actually ever think Baroque music is.
So from your perspective, there is no hierarchy of music where classical music kind of stands up there and the rest is popular music.
Well, let me put it to you this way. My father's 78. I have respect for him because he's older than me. And I have respect for my elders. So I have respect for music that is older, you know. That's it. But I think that the younger music is pretty good too. You know, and maybe in 78 years we will have respect for that type of music as we do for the music that's that old now. So it's just a matter of perspective.
In some ways, it's a kind of misplaced sense of respect that we have somehow put classical music in one category. That's why a lot of younger people just don't move towards it.
Institutionalization of anything. Look, we don't have... just recently, there have become, you know, these kind of institutions as Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and stuff like that. And, you know, now we look at classical jazz. You know, Duke Ellington is now classical jazz. I mean, what's classical jazz? You know, there's people who say, you know, Miles Davis is way too avant-garde compared to Duke Ellington. But then, you know, what about the people alive today? You know, I mean, where do they belong? And if they're playing jazz, I mean, you know, there's everybody has their own opinions. And that's the beautiful thing about arts. And generally, creation. Everybody has their own way of doing things. I mean, if we didn't have competition, we would only have, you know, let's say one computer firm and one cell phone company and one, you know, I'm glad that there's, you know, Apple iPhone and that there's Samsung and, you know, that those two were so incredibly ingenious that, you know, the big giant that was before Nokia, it's not around anymore because, you know what, they did things better. They were more creative. They were more interesting. They were savvier. They were, you know, but that's the way that the world works. So we don't necessarily have to say that, oh, Nokia was terrible. No, they were fantastic for the time that they actually did their best for a certain era, for a certain place, for a certain time. And now we moved on. You know, it's complete logical evolution. Yeah.
So music evolves, and so from your perspective, there is no hierarchy. In fact, there is no genre.
There is no genre. I really believe that there should be, though, in my opinion, a love and respect, a real honesty to what you do. And if you're going to approach anything, whether it's love, friendship, business, you should do it creatively and you should do it with honesty and with love.
There's a group of musicians. I was going to call them a band. I don't want to call them whatever. You can tell me what they are. You have a group of people with you and you'll be performing in the concert. How would you describe this group of musicians and what's their sound?
Well, they're actually electronic. So, I mean, they will be amplified and they... keyboard and, you know, they're basically like a rhythm section, which is playing with a trumpet with the backing of a large symphony orchestra. The trumpet functions really in the role of, let's say, maybe a lead singer in a band. The trumpet is actually, in many ways, a lead singer in the hands of Ole Edvard Antonsen. He is actually not only a trumpet virtuoso, but he wrote a lot of this material himself. He's a great creator of sounds, of ambiances, of feelings, of he's not just kind of showing what he can do on the trumpet and look at me as a great virtuoso trumpet player. He sometimes just plays one single note with such incredible aura that would be enough for everybody. But he has compiled this journey, this musical journey, through his understanding of, through his lens. And what I like about him so much is that we have been actually friends for many, many years. He's actually one of the coaches in my Baltic Sea Philharmonic as well. He's actually considered to be, I think, one of the top three trumpet players, I think, of all time. So to actually say that he's such a humble and down-to-earth person means a lot, because I think the reason why he is as great as he is because he doesn't take himself too seriously.
Is he playing also in the Firebird, or is he only playing in the second half of the program?
He's playing in the second half of the program. So basically, the Firebird is the orchestral showpiece, so to say. And it's kind of the place where the orchestra really lets its, I would say, kind of all the bells and whistles out, you know, and really shines. And then in the second half, the orchestra is actually adding to you see, a lot of people think that the orchestra in that type of context is in a backup role. I really don't think so. I think that the orchestra actually is in a role of added dimension and depth. If you take the orchestra out and you have only, let's say, the trumpet and the band, then it's missing something. It's almost like taking the Mona Lisa and taking the whole
background.
Just cutting her out, and it's very nice, but you don't have, it's not contextualized at all, you know. This is what an orchestra does. And of course, if you have a close collaborator like Ole Edvard and I, then I bring the orchestra much closer to the forefront. And then it really becomes integrated as part of the band. It becomes actually the extension, much bigger version of the band itself. Yeah.
Coming back to Firebird, it's been claimed that Stravinsky said that this piece of music is patchy. What's your opinion?
I think it's one of the greatest patchy pieces ever. No, but, you know, I maybe understand what patchy means is that it's like a quilt work, you know, of different things. And it is. I mean, it's you have something called musical landscapes in the second half. And this is in the first half, Stravinsky's version of musical landscapes. I mean, that's actually what it is. That's exactly what it is. It is a ballet of different scenes, of a patchwork of different feelings, emotions, and a story, which, you know, years ago, I think in 2000, there was a new version of Fantasia.
Disney's
Fantasia, done with the Chicago Symphony and James Levine. And this was the follow-up to this original Stokowski version, which came out in the 30s, I think, or 20s. I wasn't alive back then. So anyway, that animation of the Stravinsky Firebird has stuck with me. It's actually, I think, one of the best visual representations of this piece, which I can imagine. It's really so inspiring, and actually the piece is so well played in such good tempos also, you know, where it gives complete understanding to this incredible, you know, this life and the celebration actually of
life sustaining forces.
It's life sustaining forces, yeah. And it's bigger. You see, our comprehension of life would not be the same without music. I mean, music is like a fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth dimension. We don't even know, actually, to tell you the truth. I mean, what is music? Well, it's something which, it's not a physical reality for us. It's not even a conscious reality. It's an emotional and logically inexplainable force, which even scientifically we can't really, there's nothing to actually make it tangible. But it has such a huge impact on us.
From that perspective, how important is music education to young people?
Music education, in my opinion, music education is the most important thing. I mean, this creates possibilities for people that no other thing can possibly develop or form. There are tangible things like art, like actual drawing, let's say any type of handcrafts, etc. I mean, those you make things, yeah? You can, for example...
There is a product.
Yeah, there's a product. There's something tangible you can, you know, either look at, feel, touch, etc. Then there's things like...
Dance.
Dance or physical, very good, but you dance to what? Music, right? Then there's theater, and you physically embody certain ideas and stories, okay, which are usually written down, and they're words which have very specific connotations, you know? I mean, even if there...
There's greater clarity between the sign and its significance, yeah, as opposed to music.
But music is something which is so personal to and interpretively so different to every single individual, because it is playing on your story. Your individual story is something that you can relate to. Let's say we can all relate to Shakespeare's Macbeth, or let's say Hamlet, or I mean, there's certain aspects, you know, or, you know, let's say the Merry Wives of Windsor. There's certain things that you, oh yes, of course, yes, oh, that's funny, you know. But music is, even if it's programmatic music, even if it's a love song, even if it's just sounds, it becomes something different to every single individual. And I think that creates a whole different way of thinking, creativity, being, confidence, leadership, entrepreneurism. It creates a way of being that you cannot replace.
And everybody can understand music.
Well, it is the glue that actually completely binds us all. You know, we may have different understandings of politics, religion, all sorts of philosophies, different understandings, yeah? But music, all of a sudden, we're on the same page. We can all hold hands and be the same. And that is the most incredible thing about music. It is the only time when war stops and harmony begins. And that's, for me, probably the greatest power that anything can have on anything else.
Thank you very much, Christian.
Thank you.
Conductor Christian Javi. He'll be conducting the Malaysian Philharmonic Orchestra tomorrow at 8:30 p.m. and Sunday at 3 p.m. And he'll be joined by a band led by Ole Edvard Antonsen. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.